You're listening to a ComicsXF podcast. Hello and welcome to the ComicsXF Interview Podcast, the show where two best friends talk about comics with the people who make them. I'm Dan Grote.
And I'm Matt Lazowitz. And this week's guest is a returning guest, but his first time on the show since the name change, the writer of the upcoming Space Ghost series from Dynamite. Please welcome back David Pepos.
Hey, David. Well, thank you guys so much for having me. Congrats on the name change. For a second, I thought you were talking about me. Thing I didn't know. I'm so excited to be on the show. Thank you guys for having me, and I'm excited to talk about my brand new book at Dynamite Entertainment, Space Ghost, coming out May 1st.
Right on.
So we just want to mention, by our tabulation, this is the sixth time you've done this show. Which makes you the first member of the Six Timers Club. We don't have a nice jacket or anything like SNL does for Five Timers, but it's great to have you back. And we wanted to, say,
oh my gosh, it's what, three more, and then I get like a free smoothie.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna keep grinding until I get that smoothie out of you guys. But no, huge honor. I always appreciate all the good conversations that we have about comics and about my work. And so, I appreciate the time and support, because I know you guys have a lot of books to choose from.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about one of those books right now, because you are here to talk about Space Ghost, launching May 1st at Dynamite, with art by Jonathan Lau, colors by Andrew Dollhouse, and letters by Taylor Esposito. Matt, take us back to Saturday mornings.
Greed and corruption flourish in the darkness between the stars. With the territories of the Galactic Federation spread far and wide across the vastness of space, pirates and hijackers ransack the distant colonies with cruel disregard for the innocent scientists living within them. Yet, there is a cosmic vigilante who metes out justice throughout the galaxy, bringing vengeance to those who prey upon the defenseless. Some say he is a policeman who has abandoned the strictures of the law. Others say he is a phantom, the sole survivor of a war-torn planet. And those who have survived his wrath claim he is more a force of nature, able to bend the very elements of creation to decimate his enemies. They call him Space Ghost! And his adventures begin here.
Wow! That was amazing. I'm going to record that and play it every day I start writing. That was amazing. Thank you.
Well, I remember that the last time you were on was the crossover, and Will did my bit, and you said that he was the one who's going to do it from now on. The North remembers, my friend.
Well, that was amazing. And yes, I think you really kind of encapsulated our tone in a really fun way. So thank you for that.
So peek behind the curtain for the audience. Last week or the week before, depending on when this drops, we had Jed McKay on, and Matt read the solicit for Bloodhunt, and there he decided to go full EC horror host, and I just egged him on, because this is, by now this is a firmly established bit on the show. Matt messages me at some point in the past week, as he often does, and he just said, "I'm going full Don Pardo for this." And I'm like, please, want you to follow your heart.
Yes, please. My neighbors are already tired of me shouting "Space Ghost" in the elevator. So it's nice that it's not just me this time.
Oh, no. I saw it. I was like, okay, I've got to work in. I've got to work in the belt in this time.
So let's go back to the beginning here. Not 1966, but when did this gig come along for you?
Sure. So Dynamite approached me. It was at New York Comic Con last year, So they had just announced that their partnership with Warner Brothers Discovery, doing a line of licensed comics. And they just announced Declan Shalvey and Drew Moss on Thundercats. And Joe Rybant approached me at my table and said, "Hey, I'm sure you saw the news. It was like the talk of New York Comic Con." And he said, "We're doing a Space Ghost book, and you would be at the top of our list. Would you have any interest in tackling it?" And it was one of those things, like, as even on the show floor, I was like, yeah, there could be something like really cool about this. And then as I started like rewatching all of the old episodes, I really started like remembering all the stuff that felt so timeless and classic about it. And I was like, yeah, there's like a whole superhero epic that just is waiting to be told with Space Ghost and his supporting cast and his iconic rogues gallery. And so it didn't take long for me to say yes. And I probably researched for about a month and a half as I put my pitch together. And it's the longest pitch I've ever written. It clocked out at 31 pages. Warner Brothers and Dynamite said, yeah, run with this. And so that's what I've been working on ever since.
And how did the team assemble for this one? Did, you know, artists on down, did they all come through Dynamite, or had you been looking around?
So Dynamite has a Rolodex of artists that they tend to work with. And we all very quickly started talking about Jonathan Lau. Jonathan, I've been a big fan of his for, it's probably been about 15 years, since he did Green Hornet with Kevin Smith. And I remember what an interesting style he had. It's very kinetic and very moody. You know, it's sort of like, it's like Tim Sal on fast forwarded, you know, is like the way that I tend to describe him. And so when Jonathan's name started coming up, I immediately was like, yeah, I think this is the guy. I really think he could do a great job with it. And as we brought him into the fold and he started drawing pages, I was very gratified to see that like he was the right guy for this, because he's able to balance like these cool big blockbuster moments, but also these like very heartfelt character beats. And I know Andrew Dollhouse was brought in by Jonathan. They've worked together before, and so that was by Jonathan's request. And I had worked with Andrew on a 5-page Miles Morales short last year, and was very impressed with the work that he did. So I was thrilled that, if anything, I think Andrew is like just setting the bar higher and higher with his work on this. And then Taylor Esposito. Taylor was funny. Dynamite actually brought him up, and I was so thrilled that they did, because Taylor and I actually owe my career to Taylor Esposito, in that he introduced me to my very first colorist, the late Jason Smith on Spencer and Locke. And so I wouldn't have a career if Taylor hadn't made that introduction. And so the fact that we never actually worked together on a direct market book was always a little weird to me. We worked on a very quick anthology story that hasn't come out yet, for the indie scene, but being able to actually finally work with Taylor, it feels like something that should have happened a long time ago. And I'm glad that this is the book, because the whole team is really just like, I think, very excited and enthusiastic about Space Ghost and the story that we're telling. And so it really kind of inspires all of us to like keep bringing our A game. And it's a really nice sort of self-sustaining cycle.
What is your history with Space Ghost?
Sure.
He's one of those cartoons from the 60s that didn't run that long, but felt like it was in a constant syndication in the 80s. Yeah. And I think a lot of readers are more familiar, or modern readers, from Coast to Coast, the Cartoon Network show.
Yes, it's a great question. And so for me, it's funny. The original Space Ghost cartoon came out 20 years before I was born. So, and even the Space Stars revival, that's 5 years before I was born. And so for me, of course, my introduction, you know, coming of age in the 90s and early 2000s, was Space Ghost Coast to Coast. And so at the time, you know, I saw it as like, oh, it's like this kind of surreal send up of Batman, you know, but also like in the talk show days and as the talk show host. And it wasn't until my first internship in the industry at DC Comics that I learned who Alex Toth was. And I learned, like, oh, that guy's like a legend. And that's what I learned, that, oh, Space Ghost was like actually built as a classic superhero, you know, coming out right on the heels of Adam West's Batman. And so all this coming together, it was right place, right time. I happened to get a trade paperback collection of Joe Kelly and Ariel Olivetti's Space Ghost miniseries while I was at DC. And so I read all this, and as I'm kind of like, you know, drawing all this information, I'm kind of like, huh, Space Ghost, like, you know, he's got a little bit of Batman, he's got a little bit of Superman, he's got a little bit of Flash Gordon. He's kind of got all the ingredients of an A-lister. And I think because so much spotlight and attention has been focused on his talk show host days in Coast to Coast, it's sort of like, I live in California. I live by the La Brea Tar Pits. And so I think about this all the time. You know, it's like the animal that kind of went under the tar and the bones are still like perfectly preserved. That's kind of what happened to the classic superhero version of Space Ghost. And so that was, I think, the big appealing part for me was I was like, oh, the bones are still really strong. And I get to be the one who kind of gets to excavate it. And I get to be the one who's offered a pretty generous runway to explore all that. You know, by the time that the series wraps, whenever it wraps, you know, barring any catastrophes, knock on wood, I'll be the most senior Space Ghost writer in comics history, which is like a weird thing to think. But that, I think, speaks to Space Ghost is he's a character with all these amazing ingredients, but they've been very little opportunities to do anything with him in the comics business. You know, six issues on for Joe Kelly's run, Future Quest kind of had Space Ghost bookended. And then there was the Future Quest Presents, which had like four issues of Space Ghost. So yeah, being able to kind of tell like a big, broad epic in the vein of like Batman the Long Halloween, that was very attractive to me. And so that, I think, kind of, it all comes full circle where, you know, it's this character that has such cultural cachet finally finding his moment, and me sort of being in the right place in the right time and saying, oh, all the stuff I love about superheroes as a genre, we can tell all those stories with this character in a way that kind of draws from all these different tones and influences and genres and inspirations, and it all still feels organic and that nobody has done it before. So it really is, like, to mix my metaphors, the perfect storm of excellent conditions. And it really kind of, as the more I worked on the book, the more I realized just how incredibly lucky I was to be working on it.
I mean, you mentioned Batman in there, and the Hanna-Barbera cartoons of the 60s, there were formulas for the different types. You know, the biggest one is the groups of kids solving mysteries, Scooby-Doo, Jabberjaw, Funky Phantom. But the superheroes all had, you know, the hero with the one or two sidekicks. Space Ghost is most famous, Birdman sort of second. But Space Ghost is basically out of the box, as you said, Batman in space.
Yeah.
What differentiates Space Ghost from Batman, from Birdman, from the other characters in that genre? Yeah.
It's a great question. Well, so I'm going to start with sort of the surface level things, and then I'm going to dig in a little deeper into like what I think really sets Space Ghost apart as a character. As a concept, I think, you know, you can say Batman in space, but I think there's also an element of him that you see a lot of shared superhero DNA with Superman, in that, like, Batman is a guy who's known for his human vulnerability. You know, he's smart, and in the post Grant Morrison era, you know, you've got the Bat God, where, you know, he's prepared for everything, but he's still a human being. You know, bullets are his kryptonite. And so, whereas Superman is the guy who is a little larger than life. You know, he's got the super strength, he's got the flight and speed, he's got the invulnerability. He's got the heat vision and the cold breath, and you have approximations of all of that in Space Ghost, where, you know, he's got the flight and the super strength and the force fields and his power bands that give him power over flames and ice and laser beams and his invisibility belt. So it is a little more heightened than something like Batman. And so I think that was something I definitely had to wrap my head around when I was working on it, is just like, how does Space Ghost powers work? You know, how do his weapons work? How do they work so you can kind of figure out how to choreograph him, but also how do you give the guy limitations? And so that sort of, I think, is a flavor element. And I think also Batman is a character who, yeah, he has had heightened adventures. You know, he's teamed up with the Justice League. Of course, he's a fixture in the DC universe. But he's a character that, like, when you're really playing true to who he is, he's a street level character. You know, he's a street level character who happens to have a couple of elevated people. You know, like Mr. Freeze and Clayface feel, and maybe Poison Ivy feel like the three most elevated. They're the ones that seemingly have true powers. Otherwise, it's just people with like crazy weapons, like, you know, the Joker with his gas and the Scarecrow with his gas, whereas Space Ghost, you know, because you have the space element, you can really throw in all sorts of different kinds of characters and it all still feels true. It doesn't feel like it's, oh, it's Batman, but in a big one-off. This is, oh yeah, this is Space Ghost, and these are his adventures. And you have the different kinds of aliens and all of Alex Toth's amazing designs that kind of did a lot of heavy lifting as far as like these characters and their high concepts. But that's not the question you're asking me. I know the question you're asking me, and so I'm going to get back to that one, which is what makes Space Ghost different as a character, his personality. And so for me, it all comes down to it's the sidekicks. It's not to say that Batman doesn't have sidekicks. Of course, he's grown an entire Bat family that's really grown by leaps and bounds over the last like 25 years. However, Batman started out as a solo hero. He quickly gets Robin. And so Robin almost feels a little like an accessory, you know, where like, you have Batman and Robin stories, and it was obviously very popular at the time and continues to endure, but you can tell Batman stories without Robin and it still feels like a Batman story. Space Ghost, I don't think feels that way to me. In that from the moment you see him, you said it yourself, he shows up fully fleshed out, fully formed in 1966, fighting the Heat thing. It's him and Jean and Jace and Blip. And, you know, they say like once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, three times is a pattern. For me, that was the first thing that stood out to me about Space Ghost is that like he's got these three sidekicks. Like that is a very pointed statement. And that trying to do a Space Ghost story without the sidekicks playing a prominent role doesn't feel like Space Ghost to me. It feels like trying to make a banana split without a banana, you know? And so that really became, I think, the through line of our entire run is how does this guy, Space Ghost, wind up with three sidekicks in his orbit? And how do those three sidekicks wind up kind of not only changing the parameters of his mission, but also kind of forcing him to reckon with that humanity that he's kind of been shoving way, way down? And so that's, I think, the big thing for me is Jean and Jace, it's not generational like a Robin or a Batgirl. You're never going to have another Janet or another Jace. If they go off to college, Space Ghost isn't going to be like, here's the new Jace. And I think that means it's a different kind of story. You know, Batman is built that he's supposed to endure. He's supposed to have a long running narrative with minimal breaks over that's supposed to the last decades. I don't think Space Ghost is that kind of character. I think Space Ghost is the kind of guy who it is. It's that core four. And by virtue of that, that means you can kind of watch them grow and you can watch them develop. And I think that also spoke to the kind of runway that Dynamite talked with me about is when we first talked about the book, they said, what do you think about a year to start? And so I thought, okay, like a year, a guaranteed year on this character. How do we have them develop? How do we have like actual like issue to issue interpersonal dynamics evolving between Space Ghost and his wards? And that really, I think, appeals to me in an interesting way in that Batman is a tortured figure of the night. You know, he's fighting crime. That's like who he is. And he's happened to bring in these sidekicks, you know, sort of through sheer force of personal gravity. But that's not who he really is in the public eye. And to me, I think Space Ghost, that's the big difference is I see him. Yeah, he's a crime fighter. But he's also the ultimate single dad who's in way over his head and trying to sort of figure out what's the right thing to do now that I have two kids and a monkey living with me. And that, I think, makes for some really interesting, poignant stuff that really is, I think, the emotional meat of our entire series.
So we're going to go from emotional meat to a different question here. So our dear Twitter inquisitor, as Muff Fangirl asked, why did so many old cartoons have monkey and ape sidekicks? And yeah. I don't, this isn't necessarily a David question, but you know, the old adage, of course, going back decades in comics, is if you put apes on the cover of a comic, it will sell.
Yeah,
that is not exclusive to comics.
I think so much of it, everything I think about Space Ghost, because I am drawing so much from the 1966 run, but I think every iteration of Space Ghost has very much been a product of its time. You know, that 1966 run, you can see the DNA of Adam West's Batman. And then you can also see, like, yeah, like Silver Age comics, like you throw a monkey on it, you notice a noticeable uptick in sales. It's not nothing. And so, yeah, I think, you know, when they were putting the show together, my bet is they were like, okay, like we can have a boy as the sidekick and a girl as the sidekick. And so every kid can watch this show and be excited about it. And you know what? Monkeys are popular. Let's give them a mascot. We'll give them a monkey. As but you know, because that's just the style of the times. You know, it's like the Simpsons episode where they're hanging onions on their belts. Those were monkeys in comics in the 60s. But I think every iteration of Space Ghost since then has been emblematic of its time. I mean, you have the 81 revival and Space Stars, which is like coming out on the heels of Super Friends and Spider-Man and his amazing friends. And then you've got even Coast to Coast, which I think is very emblematic of the irony of the MTV generation. And you even see Joe Kelly and Ariel Olivetti's run, which, you know, is coming out right around the same time as Batman Begins. And I know it was clearly parallel like structure. I don't think one necessarily influenced the other, but you can see it, like it was clearly tapping the same zeitgeist. So I think that's kind of what we're trying to do with our Space Ghost, is we're taking all those core ingredients from 1966 and saying, okay, well, if you were going to tell a story in 2024 with all those ingredients, what do you do? And how do you tell them sort of through the storytelling lenses of today? But I do think, I wanted to stay true to that spirit. And that's why we, you know, Blip is not only in our book, but I think he's like the linchpin of our whole narrative. And I think it was because, yeah, you try to tell a Space Ghost story with no Blip and it just like doesn't feel right. It's such a specific choice that like it would feel weird not to do it.
It's like, why the last man without ampersand?
Yeah, but, exactly.
You know, in thinking about this, DC, April is they're like, anthology is APE hyphen roll. Yeah. Like they're going all in, and with the variant covers, like I knew DC had a lot of primate characters. I had no idea how deep the well went. You know, once I get past like Gorilla Grodd and Monsieur Mala, I start to check it. Yeah, Detective Chimp, of course.
Yeah, it's not an insignificant amount of monkey characters. Yeah,
it is a non-zero number of chimps. Yes.
They just released a trade of the JL Ape crossover, an annual event where Grodd recruited a bunch of other monkey characters and also turned the Justice League into monkeys. And that will be covered on Bat Chat in an all ape theme episode at some point in the not too distant future, I think, just because I want to cover monkeys.
Yeah. See, like it's a time honored tradition in our business. So who am I to stand in the way of that?
So what is your pitch to people who may only know Space Ghost from the talk show?
Yeah. Space Ghost is a character that is like equal parts Batman and Star Wars. He's like, what if Batman fought crime in the Star Wars universe? Is like the easy sell for Space Ghost as a character. But what we're doing is we're kind of doing the Space Ghost world tour, where we are pitting him through a gauntlet of his most iconic villains, and his villains are every bit as iconic as Batman or Spider-Man or The Flash. And on top of that, we're kind of telling this overarching story about a lone vigilante bringing in two orphans and their pet monkey, And how do they go from being these orphaned rescues to becoming his trusted sidekicks, to becoming his valued partners, and then becoming this surrogate found family? So this is very much a coming of age story. And it has just as much in common with sort of sci-fi action adventure, but it also kind of feels similar to like the Lex, Tim, and Grant arc, like emotional arc from Jurassic Park. And that was sort of like a key cultural touchstone. So yeah, we're telling a story that's basically Batman the Long Halloween meets J.J. Abrams and Star Trek. So hopefully you dig that, because that's all the stuff that I really dig. But yeah, it's also just, we're telling a superhero story that's kind of cranked to 11 with none of sort of the structural obstacles that often come in the genre. We don't have to share our toys. We don't have to check in with anybody. Warner Brothers has been extremely enthusiastic about the stuff that we've been doing on the book. They have been saying, put pedal to the metal, whatever you think is the most dynamic and character-driven way to do it, do it. So this is like really pure uncut stuff. It's just a big kind of sprawling superhero action adventure. But I would say the real hook is just, if you don't know who Space Ghost is, I'm very excited to show you why he's the greatest superhero in the galaxy. You don't need to do any homework. I've done it all for you. If you want to get in on the ground floor of a brand new superhero universe, all you have to do is pick up issue one.
Hey. All right. But question for the group, before we pull away completely from the coast to coast stuff, favorite first wave Adult Swim show? And I will give my answer first. It is C-Lab 2021.
I should say Space Ghost. However, I think you kind of never forget your first love. And so for me, that is Aqua Teen Hunger Force. But I love Space Ghost. Aqua Teen Hunger Force, you never forget your first.
Both excellent choices for me. Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law. Just the wild crossovers. When you start your series with Apache Chief lampooning the person who spilled the hot coffee on themselves and decided to sue McDonald's, it's that sets a high bar and it just keeps going.
Good choice.
That show had, just thinking about like the fact that like before Stephen Colbert was like a network late night talk show host, he was Phil Ken Seven and oh my god, the other one, the bad guy character, the shrink ray. Back off,
really?
Yeah,
how did I not know that?
He actually had to stop doing the show for a while, and so they had to like pull back those two characters, but then he came back for at least like the movie or a reboot or something like that.
Reducto.
Wow. Reducto, of course. You know. He's got a shrink gun, of course. Yeah.
So I was thinking Mentok with this, the judge and Paget Brewster as Bird Girl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would watch that show.
Did David freeze on us?
No. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I was looking at Stephen Colbert's IMDb to be like, wait, where is this?
Oh, yeah. There and Venture Brothers is the first Professor Impossible.
Yeah, that's right. And he got subbed out for, again, when he had to pull back from his like voice acting. I think he got replaced by Bill Hader as Professor Impossible. So, yeah.
I did not know this.
But it is my understanding that you've been getting some shout outs from Brack himself, Andy Merrill.
Andy is such a sweetheart. I can't say enough good things about Andy Merrill. It was one of those things. Andy is not only just like a super talented guy, but he's a very gracious guy. And so when we actually announced Space Ghost, and nobody was more surprised than me, the kind of groundswell of support that we got when we announced Space Ghost and what we continue to get like every time I show a piece of art for that book. It dwarfs anything that I've done. I've written The Avengers, I've written on Punisher, I've written Moon Knight, and like Space Ghost, people, it's like a cultural phenomenon. And so Andy, even when we first announced, spotted it, shared it, didn't know me from Adam. And so he and I started talking, and it was one of those things that I was just like so kind of blown away that like Space Ghost royalty was like talking to me, let alone like acknowledging my work. And it was just a reminder that I feel this way every time I worked on something licensed, but it's like, you're working on something that's a little bigger than yourself, you know, like you're sort of joining like a bigger fraternity. But even like, you know, working at like Marvel, most of those characters, people, you know, there's an NBA sized amount of people who have worked on that character. That's not really the case on Space Ghost. You know, that's a pretty tight crew of people. And so I showed Andy our first two issues of the book. And he's been so supportive of it. And I'm grateful for the man. You know, he's been so wonderful and so supportive. And it's been so nice to see with Space Ghost's 30th or Coast to Coast's 30th anniversary, seeing Andy's Twitter presence triple in the span of a week, because people were just like giving him as long overdue praise for what he's done on that show. It was really heartwarming for me to see, and seeing just Andy thriving in that spotlight. You know, he's a cool dude. Every time we get some new, like a new lettering pass on an issue, I always pass it to Andy just to be like, oh man, like I really hope he likes it. And great guy.
So what is the, I guess, research phase been like for you with this book? You've mentioned the Kelly and Olivetti series a couple times, but you know, did you watch like the original cartoon?
Oh, yes.
You know, are you tracking down the runs from like other publishers, which
yes.
I have to imagine might be tricky.
I watched every episode of the original run, the 66 run. I took detailed notes on every episode. I watched every episode of the 81 revival in Space Stars, and I took detailed notes on every episode of that. I took detailed notes on the Joe Kelly and Ariel Olivetti run. I took detailed notes on Future Quest. I took detailed notes on Future Quest Presents. I took detailed notes on Mark Evanier and Steve Rude's Comico one-shot. There was a Gold Key one-shot that I managed to get a copy of that I flipped through. I recently got to read some Cartoon Network Presents with Space Ghost, although that's not quite the same thing as what we're doing. Anything I could get my hands on. I've got my research documents, the only thing longer than my pitch document. I think that's somewhere in the mid-40s. I basically did like, I spent like 3 weeks doing nothing but watching Space Ghost. And sort of thinking in my head, okay, how do these pieces fit together? And what stands out to me first and foremost is like, as a creator, you know, what about the characters stands out, you know, figuring out just like, how does Space Ghost work? Like, just as like, how do his powers work? What's his dynamic with Jan and Jason Blip? You know, what are like the key villains that like, if you were going to do a run on Space Ghost, you would feel a little cheated if they didn't show up. And so, a lot of research, because yeah, it's just one of those things. Like I saw, of course, you know, I saw Coast to Coast, but I saw some episodes on Boomerang, you know, growing up, but it's one of those things that like, you really want to like take it in fresh. So I think the thing that really stood out for me is that, and what was so exciting about this series is, they're 5 minutes a pop. You know, they are short episodes. And so there's very little, there's no continuity. There's no backstory to any of this. Space Ghost just shows up fully formed. They basically have just enough time to sort of introduce a villain, figure out the villain's plot, throw Space Ghost and his sidekicks into jeopardy. And somehow one or the other frees somebody and they get out. And then sometimes like, you know, the bad guy falls into like a sea of space piranhas or, you know, the mists of death or something like that. So for me, I was just like, oh, there's like this whole universe. It's like going up. It's like being a chef and somebody says, hey, I've got this whole table full of these immaculate ingredients that nobody's ever made a 5-course meal out of. Do you want to make a 5-course meal out of it? And you're kind of like, yeah, with those kinds of ingredients, like, yeah, it's kind of like, I don't even feel like the pressure. I mean, obviously, I want to make sure that I'm like doing right by the fans and like trying to tell like a cool story, but I don't feel like nervous about this because I'm just like, these characters are so cool that as long as you kind of like stay true to them and you know, like you can't go wrong. And so that was like actually a really freeing thing for me. It was just like, okay, so many of these characters, especially the villains, they kind of exist on vibes, you know. They exist based on like the designs that Alex Toth created for all of them. You know, there's no history of like what's Brack's deal, you know? And so it's just kind of watching like all the shows and figuring out like, okay, like Brack is not a guy who's looking out to conquer the universe. Brack is a guy who's like very blue collar in his aspirations. He's a dirty space pirate. He and his brother, you know, they're just going to knock off the nearest gold freighter. That's like their thing. Versus like somebody like Metallus is like Dr. Doom by way of General Zod. You know, where like that guy is like a world conqueror. You know, and then sort of everybody in between. And so that's kind of the thing that I had a lot of fun doing on Space Ghost is figuring out what qualities really stood out to me for each of these characters, particularly the villains, and then figuring out what kind of wrinkles can we add to the mix to really play that up. Somebody like Zorak, for example, it's reductive to call him Space Ghost's Joker, but I understand why people would, in that he's sort of Space Ghost's like most dangerous villain, I'd say, or maybe his scariest. And for me, I saw it as, well, yeah, he's a homicidal praying mantis. Like something about him is like inherently alien to the way that we as human beings see the world. And so I was kind of like, okay, how do we add wrinkles to him as a character that like speak to that? And sort of play up that out of if you put all the Council of Doom in one room, like Zorak is the one that Space Ghost is going to be trying to keep his eye on the most. And so stuff like that. But then yeah, I think also you know, I keep talking about it, but it's just that emotional through line between Space Ghost and his sidekicks. I think that's really, I think the hook of the book to me. A personal aside for me is I'm the older brother of a set of triplets, so I kind of know very, very well what it's like to sort of be by yourself, and then suddenly like the meteor hits, and there's three young ones kind of like just upending your entire life. And so I thought that was kind of like an interesting through line for Space Ghost is Gian and Jace kind of remind me of Lex and Tim from Jurassic Park by way of Dick Grayson and Babs Gordon. And so it was sort of figuring out how do these kids play off of one another. Jan being sort of the responsible one. She's the only girl in the family. So that's a role that a lot of only girls get forced into. She's the one who's like, if I'm not thinking things through, if I'm not responsible, then what little family I have left isn't going to be there anymore. But that, rather than being docile, like, you know, that's a valid critique of the original 60s show, is a product of its time. Although of its time is probably actually considered fairly feminist. But for me, it was like, okay, like I see Jan is kind of feisty. You know, she's the one who calls out Space Ghost to his face. You know, she's like trained with a blaster. You know, she's like, it's got a little Annie Oakley to her. Whereas Jace is like the comedian. You know, he's on the same emotional maturity level as Blip. He's the one who's like always trying to crack jokes. He's the one who's impulsive. He's the one who's like a natural like pilot and mechanic. But for him, he's kind of like, if I don't keep morale up, if I don't keep joking, then like what little family I have is gonna go their separate ways. And so having those two play off of each other, and then Space Ghost is the straight man who occasionally has like a very biting sense of humor. You know, that's like a really fun dynamic. And so having those characters initially have some friction with one another, but then slowly start to kind of like love and trust each other, but then continue to have friction with each other as any single parent would with a bunch of kids. Yeah, I think that really provides the emotional hook for this series, and that's what sort of makes all this high-flying sci-fi spectacle worth it in the end. Because you care about these characters, you know.
So you made the comparison of Jace as Dick and Jen as Babs.
Sure.
Which member of the Bat family is Blip?
Because it's not Damien, although I would laugh and say that it is Damien. I'm trying to think like who the
Well,
wild card is. I mean, because it's not really like Ace or Titus.
I think Damien's kind of apt. I mean, monkeys are known for ripping the faces off people, and Damien is the bat family member most likely to rip your face off.
The thing is, so I will say Blip is not like he's not like one of those monkeys that he's not a face ripper offer. I gotta do some like good PR for the monkeys. Like, I guess if anything, he's like if he's probably like if Batmite couldn't talk, you know, is probably like the best way to describe him. Just because like, you know, he I don't think I'm ever gonna write a book where like Blip is mean, you know, or that Blip is like menacing. I know that was something we actually talked about at length at one point was like, you know. Only minor spoilers, you know, like I thought I was like, you know, maybe we give everybody, you know, we give Blip his mask and costume, just like, you know, just like Jan and Jace get. And we talked at length about like, well, what are we going to do for the eyes for that character? Because if you have that monkey with like all white eyes, that might look a little creepy. You know, so we're actually Blip, I think, you know, he's a funny character. I think there's a bit of comic relief with him, and a little goes a long way because he can't talk. So it's all kind of physical comedy. So you don't want to go like too overboard with it. It is very much just the cherry on top. But at the same time, sometimes I see him a little as like Wolverine in the Hellfire Club. Not that he's ripping people's faces off,
We're
but
back
just
to the
that
face
like when
ripping.
just like when all the chips are down and like Space Ghost and Jan and Jace are like in dire straits, they always overlook Blip. And that's sort of like everybody's disadvantage is like you shouldn't overlook the monkey who can turn invisible and is much smarter than the average monkey. And so we do have a Blip-centric issue planned. I think I'll probably be writing it in like probably like in the next like month or so. And that if it goes the way that I am hoping it goes, it'll be my favorite issue the entire run. So yeah, Blip's very important. And I would say he is the linchpin of the entire series. Without Blip, our series does not exist. Take that as you will.
So Dynamite is known for having a lot of variant covers on their books. How has it been watching all of those different covers from all of those different artists roll in?
It's been great. I mean, you know, I will say, like, I think Dynamite's actually been, I think, a fairly restrained as far as our Space Ghost series has gone. In that we've had our four main cover artists, and then they've had different variations of that. So they've had like foil or metal covers or black and white covers or virgin art. But yeah, boy, we really have like the four Musketeers for our cover game. And every month it's sort of like they're all jockeying to like see like which one is my favorite this month. You know, Francisco Matina is doing our A covers, and he's doing just really stellar work. And I would say his cover for issue two might be my favorite of the entire run so far. But ask me that again when issue three covers come out, because I haven't seen those yet. You know, Jay Lee is doing incredible work. I got to meet him at WonderCon and gush over how much I liked his covers. Yeah, his issue one cover, it was like this kind of intense, ethereal looking, beautiful cover. And then his issue two cover with Space Ghost fighting Zorak is just like, whew. You know, that is, I wasn't expecting to see Zorak. You know, he's not showing up for another couple of issues. But seeing that on the cover, I was just like, ooh. That is just outstanding. And then Bjorn Behrens is doing great work, and I'll always have a little affection for his work because that was sort of the first bit of art that I saw involving Space Ghost, you know, for our run. So he's doing some really cool stuff. And then Michael Cho, boy, people are stoked about Michael Cho, and I totally, yeah, I mean, he's got like his style is, I think, the closest to the more classic Space Ghost style, and he's doing incredible work. And from what I understand, I think he's with us for the long haul. So yeah, there it's really like you can't go wrong with any of these covers. And so seeing how enthusiastic everybody has been, seeing those covers, Yeah, it's unlike anything I've experienced in my career. And I think, you know, it's built, a lot of it is built on the strength of these amazing cover artists. So I hope they stick around for as long as I do.
So on a more general level, this is your first work at Dynamite. How were they to work with, especially with a licensed property where there are additional layers of oversight?
No, they've been, honestly, this, I don't think I've had a book this smooth in a long time. They've been amazing partners to work with. Honestly, like, everything's very smooth, everything's very streamlined. I think I've been saying, Dynamite and Warner Brothers have been perfect partners on this. They've really given us a ton of latitude to really kind of like explore this in like the way that we think would be like the best way to do it. And they've given us no pushback. I think I'm in the middle of writing issue 5 right now, and I think I've gotten 3 notes since we started, and like small notes. It's like, oh, hey, can we make this line a little more space sounding? Or, I think I had pitched, whether or not I'd asked, should we give Jan and Jace like superhero names or not? And they're like, no, thanks. And I'm like, great. Okay. Like, easy enough. So yeah, that's been kind of, they've been wonderful to work with. I think I've actually gotten a chance to see like a handful of the licensor notes, and they're enthusiastic. Like, they're like, this sounds great, go for that. And I've worked with a lot of licensors, and like some of them are easier to work with than others. And just being able to like do a long run like this and to have like a good relationship with the licensors is amazing. So yeah, Dynamite's been great and very supportive, and I've been really appreciative that, like, I get emails from Nick Barucci being like, hey, like, okay, what do you want us to do to like push this book? Which I've never gotten an email like that from a publisher, like, ever. And the fact that like they seem to be like really kind of pushing the book and talking about it on their various channels, it's nice. It really does. They seem to be in the trenches with me, which is a nice place to be. But also kind of they are pretty good at just being hands off, which is also great. And I think it's, again, it's different animals, like, it's one of those things. I understand when you're working in a big superhero universe, like when I do at Marvel, you have to kind of know the traffic patterns. And so the editors like have to be like, hey, like, somebody else is using this toy, you can't use this toy. Or like, hey, there's another story that's coming out that's like this, so you can't do that. Whereas Dynamite's kind of in that interesting sweet spot where like they don't really have to, they don't, there's no traffic patterns that need to be understood that I'm aware of. So they're just like, yeah, do that thing, run with it, have fun. Yeah, so it's been a really nice experience, in every possible way.
You're doing a lot of press for this, I assume. Has anyone tried subjecting you to a Space Ghost Coast to Coast style interview?
God help me. No, nobody's done that yet. And you guys have probably passed your chance already. So nobody yet. I don't know. I don't know. I would be so punch drunk, I don't know what I would do. Don't try that at home, kids. But nobody has tried it yet, and God willing, nobody will.
Listen, I thought about it, but I was just like, I don't know that I have it in me to write the material.
Thank you. I appreciate your restraint.
And I love to do voices so much. I'd have to be doing a Zorak or Brak voice the entire episode, and that would just kill my vocal cords.
Yes, that would be, yes. I do not know how I would respond to that. But yes, I don't know how that'll work, but maybe one day.
Not to mention the fact we've already subjected you to Will twice. I mean, you more or less have already had this Space Ghost style
Yeah,
interview.
exactly. I'll never forget the Skrull invasion interview we did.
Oh,
Oh yes, that is one of my favorites. Oh
it's an
boy,
old-timer.
it is. But back to your first love. Will this version of Space Ghost also spin off an Aqua Teen Hunger Force? And if so, can we get beautifully rendered David Nakayama variant covers of the Mooninites flipping the bird as hard as they possibly can?
No. you know, it's, no, it's actually kind of a one size fits all answer, not just the word no, but that, because I've had a lot of people ask, like, oh, you know, are we going to see Birdman? Are we going to see the Galactic Trio? Are we going to see any number of other Hanna-Barbera characters show up? And right now, like, there's no plans currently, just because they're all separate licenses. I had asked early on about Teen Force from the Space Stars revival, because I was like, I could tell a really fun story about that, about like what happens when Jan meets a boy who is not Space Ghost or her brother. And I was told that's a separate license, and we've got the Space Ghost license, and that's what I'm working in. But yeah, I mean, look, never say never. If that's something that Warner Brothers wanted, any sort of license team up, I'd be happy to do the research. I'd be happy to dig in. But yeah, I think beyond that, Space Ghost has so much cool stuff that if anything, you know, I pitched our run as 12 issues in an annual, and we're doing a lot of done in one stories for this run. So, you know, we're able to hit a lot of these villains, you know, with only the occasional two-parter for like the biggest and baddest villains. But there were some villains that I was like, okay, we can kind of fit them in as a cameo, or we can fit them in as like a quick thing. You know, you got Tanzit and Brago and One Eye and Lurker who show up for a little bit in issue one. And there are a couple other cameos that have shown up in issue three already. But there are a few villains that were like really on the fence where I'm like, they're too good to be cameos. But I don't I've already picked my core villains for the actual run, because, you know, we have to build to the Council of Doom. I don't think that's like a big spoiler. I think that's just obvious. So, you know, we are introducing all those characters plus a few more. So there are a handful of villains that I've kind of got in my back pocket that, like, if Dynamite called and said, hey, listen, we need a few more issues, I would be like, well, let's tell a story about the Antimatter Man, or, you know, Eclipse Woman, you know, a couple of like the deep cut people that I love. Glass Tor. Glass Tor, the alien king, not Glass Tor, the website where you talk crap about your job. I think there's, you know, there's so much cool stuff just in the Space Ghost license that, like, I don't feel the need to like go to other licenses. I will say though, anybody who's interested in the sort of cross license stuff, Jeff Parker and Doc Shanner did an amazing job on Future Quest juggling all that. So I would highly, highly, highly recommend checking that out. Because if you want to see all the Hanna-Barbera licenses in the same place.
So on top of Space Ghost, there's still one issue left of The Devil That Wears My Face.
Yeah. Your
historical supernatural drama about a priest possessed by a demon. How's the response been on that book so far?
You know, it's been very positive. I feel like that book has flown under the radar a little bit. You know, and I understand why, you know, because like I went from working on Punisher to working on this. And you know, those are both big, kind of big ticket spotlight superhero stuff. And so sort of a historical horror creator owned thing, I can understand why it might fly under the radar a little bit. But I do think it's some of the best creator owned work I've done. And I think I owe a lot of that to Alex Cormick. I'm very excited for people to get to read our last issue coming out May 8th, the week after Space Ghost. We've got like a fun twist for the whole series that really turns the whole thing on its ear a little bit that nobody's guessed. But it's kind of like near and dear to me. And I've put a couple of breadcrumbs in the book that nobody's caught yet. So I'm very excited, for all that. And Alex and I are already talking about like, what's the next thing we want to work on together. We've got a horror idea that when my schedule frees up, that will be the next thing I start fleshing out. But I also did come up with another horror idea this week that I got to pitch him on, because he might also be a good fit for that too. So yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with any of this stuff. But yeah, I'm so thrilled with working on it. And Mad Cave has been wonderful to work with as well. Mike Martz and Christina Harrington, are wonderful editors. This is my second book I've worked on with them. And Mark London and Chris Fernandez have been nothing but supportive. Really wonderful guys. So I'm excited to do some more work with them. I've already got another project that we're talking about right now. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have something on the docket soon to talk about with them as well.
And you said, and you obviously are busy with all this, all these books coming out through traditional publishing, but do you have any idea timeline for the final issue of
OZ?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
No, I'm very excited to do that. Honestly, we're almost ready with the Kickstarter page. I just need to record the video. That has been a little, I haven't had a weekend to do it, but it was one of those things. I was planning on launching it in May and then Space Ghost happened. And I did not expect the kind of insane response that we've gotten to Space Ghost. So my thinking was, I don't want to cannibalize either book. And so for me, it's kind of once sort of Space Ghost finds its legs, OZ is the next thing, because I want to do that Kickstarter. I want to make sure I do it right. I want to make sure that I'm in a position to promote that Kickstarter in the same way that I've been able to promote the other ones. And also in the same way that I've been able to promote Space Ghost. And trying to do two at once, I have found is challenging. I don't know how some of the bigger names do it, where they've got like I don't know how Jed McKay does it, and even he, his books are all at the same place, but I think trying to sort of bring together all these kind of divergent streams into one place, you got to do it one at a time. So I can tell you that let's see, how far along are we on art? We are about 2/3 finished with the whole last issue. I got to do a quick lettering pass on it because I wrote the thing so long ago that I want to make sure that that the dialogue is up to where I want it to be. We're very excited to do it. I can't wait to have that wrapped up. Ruben Rojas is doing some incredible work. He just sent me some pages just the other day that I was looking over. Whitney Kogar and Dave Hopkins, just a wonderful dream team. I can't say enough good things about working with them. Yes, I know it's coming a little later than I would have expected or liked. But, at the same time, I always try to think that these things happen for a reason. And I want to make sure that, especially for a Kickstarter, that I have all the bandwidth to promote it as possible, especially with all the new readers that have shown up thanks to Marvel work and Space Ghost and everything else that I hope we build our Yellow Brick Road Warriors even bigger and we go out with a bang for the last Kickstarter.
Right on. Well, speaking of Marvel briefly, it came out in the Marvel solicits for July last week that your Punisher, Joe Garrison, will be showing up in Erica Schultz's Daredevil Woman Without Fear mini. How does it feel seeing your boy spread his wings and fly?
I'm so excited. It's one of those things that I was talking with Devin Lewis, who's the editor on Daredevil and he's taking over for all things Punisher now that Tom Brevoort has taken over the X office. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking about just various stuff, and I'd said, okay, we were talking about a couple projects that we might want to get off the ground, and I asked him offhand. I said, hey, I hear you're the new Punisher editor. Now that our mini is over, Do you have any plans for what's going on with the character? And Devin was like, okay, so listen, he's going to be showing up in this new Elektra series that Erica Schultz is working on. And I was like ecstatic when he told me that. Because I think when you're doing a legacy character, that's the way that they survive, is they get some traction. I could write 100 issues of Joe Garrison, but the moment I leave, they'll be like, oh, that's Pepos's dude. I don't want to, having other writers buying into it is I think the most important thing. So, I was so thrilled and touched that Erica would think to use Joe Garrison. And also I think it's there's a nice little poetic nature to it of having these two legacy characters kind of squaring off. So yeah, I can't wait to read it. I think Joe is in excellent hands with Erica. If you haven't read her new Rat City book over at Image, the Spawn spinoff, it's terrific. It's basically Spawn 2099. She's super talented, and I'm super thrilled.
That's great. Is there anything else coming up for you that you can talk about that you want to get a plug in for that we
Let's
haven't
see.
touched on yet?
No, Space Ghost and Devil are the two things I can talk about. I mean, it's I'm sort of in that stage. I know. See, yeah, it's like I have a few other irons in the fire, but none of them I'm going to be able to talk about for a little bit. I'm working on some more Big Two stuff right now. I've got some more creator-owned stuff in the works, both of which I'm hoping I'll be able to talk about a little later in the year. Busy in all the best ways. But yes, stay tuned because Space Ghost for now, Space Ghost really is kind of like my big swing of 2024. By virtue of kind of this being my longest run of any series to date, 13 issues if all goes right. I'm really glad to be able to kind of like focus on this one and really kind of like give it my all from beginning to end. I hope it shows in the final product.
Right on. Important question as we start to wind down here. How's our little fur baby?
Oh, Ruby's doing great, thank you. She's very happy. My parents are in town right now, so she's going to be seeing them tomorrow. And they brought their little terrier as well. So Ruby's going to have all sorts of fun with her cousins Daphne and Scooby. I think she's great, and the fact that you haven't heard her on the podcast means she's doing excellent tonight because usually she's barking at something on the balcony. But no, otherwise the sweet kid is doing very well. Thank you for asking.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I actually have been joined for most of the evening by a quiet little sidekick of my own. Lola,
Oh,
say hello.
hi Lola.
Lola.
Oh, hi sweetie. Oh, okay. Yeah, I get that. Oh, you are such a sweet pup. What a
Yeah.
cute pup.
There we go.
So penultimate question as we are wrapping up. What's a comic by another creator that you're excited about, you're jamming on right now?
Oh boy, there's a bunch. Batman Offworld, Jason Aaron is killing it on that. It's funny because I can say this now because whatever, it's never gonna happen. I had had an idea for an Iron Fist pitch years ago that was sort of in that vein of like what happens if you put Danny in space. But Jason is doing like the best possible version of all that. It's definitely on the top of my stack every time I'm reading it. Salvat and Ahmed's doing really cool work on Daredevil. I'm really enjoying that. I'm reading on, I'm like biting my nails to see like how are they going to wrap up Krakoa, and the X-Men line. Let's see. There's a bunch of them that I am. James Tynion, I'm super stoked to hear about the Nice House in the Lake sequel coming out. I
Speaking of
talked about
guys who
Eric
have
Schultz.
something at every publisher all at once.
That guy, I don't know how he does that level of output. It's crazy. Ryan North on Fantastic Four, Steve Orlando with that Scarlet Witch, particularly the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver mini, is sensational. And then obviously everything Jed's doing, like the million books that Jed is doing, another guy that I don't know how he does it. There's a whole lot of cool stuff. Oh, Kelly Thompson on Birds of Prey. She and Leonardo Romero are a real dream team. So they've been doing some real cool stuff on that. And Tom King on Wonder Woman. I love Tom King on Wonder Woman. That really feels like in the vein of like his best work, like of like Human Target and Mr. Miracle, but told on like this monthly Batman like schedule. Every time I see him, I'm like, that Wonder Woman, it's real good. And he's always insultingly humble about the whole thing. You know, what else did I read recently? I read the Ghost Machine books. I read Rook Exodus, and I really enjoyed it. It felt like a lost 80s cartoon, but like in the best like kind of revamp kind of way. So, yeah, if you like that book, you'll love Space Ghost. but yeah, those are the ones that are springing to mind immediately. But I know I will kick myself after the interview and think of a whole bunch more.
No, that's a pretty good list. Well, listen, David, this has been a fantastic time.
Thank you.
Best of luck with Space Ghost, obviously. Final question before we release you back into the world. How can people follow you online and keep up with everything you got going on?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Pepos D, David Pepos Comics on Facebook. You can visit my website, which is currently under construction, at davidpepos.com, or you can subscribe to my newsletter, Pep Talks, at bit.ly/pepnews.
Right on. David, thank you once again for coming on the show.
That's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
That's it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can find the Comics XF interview podcast at Comics XF, along with our sister podcasts, Battle of the Atom and Bat Chat with Matt and Will, a Batman ranking podcast co-hosted by Matt Lazowitz and Will Nevin. You can listen to the Comics XF interview podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Audible, and at comicsxf.com. Where new episodes move Tuesday mornings. You can support Comics XF at patreon.com/comicsxf, where a dollar donation gets you a shout out at the end of every episode of the Comics XF interview podcast. A $2 donation gets you early access to this podcast and a shout out at the end of every episode. A $3 donation gets you a sticker, early access, and a shout out. A $5 donation gets you access to our monthly bonus podcast, Our Son Pete, a deep dive into the comic appearances of British mutant spy master Pete Wisdom. A $25 donation lets you request a primer, one of our custom reading guides for a series, character, or creator. And a $50 donation lets you advertise on the show. Big thanks to our patrons, Joel Elod, Shelf Dust, Lisa Slack, Will Redman, Tobias Carroll, Mike Sagawa, Will Nevin, Liz Large, Asimov Fangirl, Carla Pacheco, and Robert Secundus. You're all special, and we love you. You can follow Comics XF on Twitter at Comics XF, me at Daniel P. Grote, and Matt Lazowitz at MattLaz1013. You can also follow Comics XF on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky. And until next week, remember, Marvel Editor-in-Chief C.B. Cebulski once wrote comics under the pen name Akira Yoshida.